Hey, what's up? Welcome to the WAD Ministry Podcast, and I'm Chris. I'm here with Dan and Jordan.
Hola.
What's up?
All right. So, we've been getting quite a few questions lately, so we're going to see if we can get through this. I guess our question is, I'm hyper-competitive, almost to the point where I get anxious before every game I play and even before CrossFit workouts. How can I calm down and focus without losing my edge? It's taking its toll on the people around me. I really connected to this because I have a tendency to do the same. And in the past, I've gotten myself into unhealthy situations, and I'm desperately trying to work on that right now throughout CrossFit and just make it kind of a pleasurable thing rather than starting to get competitive. But so we'll get into that more in depth.
Yeah. I feel like most everybody probably wrestles with this to some extent. First I want to state that whoever asked the question, which we don't know who asked these questions, by the way, they come up as anonymous, but we're assuming it's somebody who plays a sport. So they're probably a little younger. So they probably play a sport, whether it's in high school or college. And then they also probably use CrossFit as a training regimen. And I imagine if they're competitive in their sport, they're more than likely going to be competitive in CrossFit. And so I think I want to start by addressing this with saying it's okay to be competitive. I think that that's something that I think it's okay to have a competitive edge. I think it's okay to want to do really well. I think it's okay to be competitive with yourself. Absolutely is okay. And I think it's slightly okay to be competitive with other people. I think as long as you can keep it within some healthy parameters, I think that that does help you elevate your performance and then elevate, you know, how it is that you can push through scenarios that you otherwise maybe wouldn't be able to. So I want to make sure that I clarify that, because I think that sometimes people who are hyper competitive, they can go in one direction and then something happens and they recognize it and they never want to get there again. Cause it's like, they're like, I don't like that the type of person I become. Cause I've been there, dude. It's like really unhealthy when you become that person. You're like, I don't even want to be around me. I'm like miserable. I care so much about my performance or how, if I'm going to win, that it will literally ruin my day. You know, I mean, shoot, dude, we have people in our gym and like at church and in our lives that their whole week will be ruined if the Lions lose. Like that's how competitive they are. Like they will let it affect everything in their life. And so I just want to preface, you know, like the advice we give with saying like, it's okay to be competitive. It's just, you need to understand what your threshold is. And then you need to understand, you know, how to control it, because it can get to a point where you will start to ruin the whole reason why you're doing what you're doing in the first place, which is for enjoyment, to push yourself, obviously to grow. And that can be a real big hindrance to all those things. So I wanted to, like, before we even start giving advice, I just wanted to say that to that whoever is asking the question, because I think sometimes people go in the opposite direction and they become really complacent, or they don't want to be competitive at all, even with themselves. And it's like, hey, it's okay. You know, it's okay to kind of like have that, a little bit of that competitive edge.
Yeah. I think that going along with that thought process, Jordan, really it comes down to being self-aware enough to know whether you find your self-worth and value in how you perform. And that's how you view yourself as a person. So basically, if you underperform, then all of a sudden you feel worthless, or there's a lot of shame that creeps into your life. That is a definite red flag. your value is not wrapped up in how you perform at CrossFit or how you perform in your sport, whatever the case may be. As we're sitting here, we know that our value is that God says we're worth dying for.
Mm-hmm.
That's where our ultimate value is, and everything else is, you know, falls underneath that. So performing well, having that desire, the other side of it is you can be competitive with others. That's why there's games, because it can be really fun competing with one another. Like, I'll remind Jordan, like, the day after he gave me a pair of shoes, I beat him in a workout. And I'll be like, Jordan, remember that one time that I beat you in the workout? And it's just one of those things where it's just fun. It's playful. And so you're not devaluing, I guess you can say, your competition, but really your brother or sister who you're supposedly competing with. In every race that I did, whether it was an Ironman that I did, and that's not bragging, I died at the end pretty much. Like, I barely lived. Or running half marathons or whatever the case might be. There seemed to be like one person that I'm like, I want to keep pace with this person. Like, we seem to be at the same level. And if I can pull off a win, or if I can overtake it at the end, great. But if that person ends up beating me, then I need to be happy and appreciate them, because they probably put as much work as I did into preparing for that. So there's like this healthy, I guess the healthy way of competition is, don't put all your value and worth in how you perform.
Mm-hmm.
You're worth way more than how you perform.
Mm-hmm.
And don't do that with somebody else either, because they're worth way more than what they perform, whether they win or lose or whatever the case may be. So understanding human dignity and value, that I think is a huge part of being competitive. And one thing that I had to really, just personal testimony time that I had to learn when I was in hockey and I was playing, I was really competitive. And one of the ways that I was pretty dominant is I was a bigger kid on the ice, which meant that I can just bulldoze people over if they were better than me skill-wise. Like, that was just something that I was able to do. And it just let out my frustration and my anger, because I was able to be more aggressive. Now in CrossFit, well, I went to endurance sports, and so that was kind of like, you know, you are competing kind of against yourself, but it's not like I can chop somebody at the knees and keep running and that be okay. And so, but going into CrossFit, there's a lot of areas where I also did more of traditional weightlifting, which there are some exercises that I do really well at. And there are others that I just can't keep up. I just can't. And so if my value or worth was in being able to keep up, I had to wrestle through, because that was part of my mentality. Like, am I good enough? Like, if I'm not good enough or as good as somebody else, then shame would motivate me to get better. And that is not a good motivation tool, because you can seriously injure yourself that way. But being able to walk in humility and grace and being like, I need to work on these weak areas. I'm not going to squat as much as some other people who've been squatting for a long time.
Jake.
there's no way. I think his 20 rep finisher was what I was, my 2 rep.
Yeah.
Like, what in the world? You know, and coming to the reality, honestly, before I die, I don't know if I'll ever reach that point. And just being okay with that. Mm-hmm. CrossFit has been a really good humbling experience for me in my competitive, I guess, development, because I have to celebrate everybody's giftings, and I have to like celebrate the community aspect of it. And there's times when I know that I'll be like, we'll do a workout and it's like, oh, I feel like I could be in the top, which is a lot of fun. But then there's other times where it's just like, I know I'm going to be dead last, but it doesn't matter, because we all cheer each other on at the end of the day. I don't know if that makes any sense, no, but like,
it totally does.
But yeah, I mean, and you mentioned the Detroit Lions losing. Mm-hmm. Like, I grew up as a Minnesota Vikings fan.
Yeah.
And my dad was that way.
Yeah.
He was a Minnesota Vikings fan. And my mom would say, man, when the Vikings would lose, a whole week would go by and he would be depressed, a jerk. And he found his value in how the Vikings did, which he has no control over whatsoever.
No.
And when you think about it, but there's still that emotional attachment,
mm-hmm.
For me, because it's like, that's the only connection that I have left with my biological dad.
Yeah.
And so when people trash talk my team,
yeah,
I take it like
personal. Yeah.
It's like, guys, just appreciate the team. And they're like, no, we're da 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 da. You know? So there is, I feel like it's a state of maturing that we can all grow in and understanding what good competitiveness is.
Mm-hmm.
I think a large part of that as well is, I think first you have to spend some time with yourself and realize, why you're competitive. Like, what is your motivating factor? I know for me, it's always been, it's hard to say, but it's always been a self-esteem issue for me. I grew up in high school. I wasn't exactly, the most popular kid in school. And then as I got older and I started getting into competitive sports, mostly endurance and stuff like that, I think a lot of my motivator was being better than everybody else. I liked the feeling of winning. And after I was wounded, I think it got even worse, because at first I started seeing myself as, I'm disabled, I'm not able to do the things I used to do, I can't do what everyone else does. But then I started getting into competitive disabled sports and nothing was ever good enough. I could never reach the point where I was satisfied in my performance. And, it got to the point where, I had qualified for the U.S. cycling team and that wasn't good enough. I wasn't happy with that. So I wanted to be, the first person with a paralyzed leg to do a backflip on a BMX bike. And looking back, it was getting to the point where it was super dangerous for me to be like that. I could have easily paralyzed myself or ended up making the brain injury worse. And there were so many negative consequences to that, but I kind of got that high from, man, no one else has done this. I've accomplished something that nobody else has been able to do. So that has been in the past my motivating factor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once you realize why you do what you do, then you're able to kind of address and start being competitive in a healthy way. You can find a new motivator to push yourself and to be a better person physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Yeah.
Once you come to that realization, why I'm doing what I do, and I can do it for a healthy reason. And also, I think, starting to compete and kind of focus on God and the process and doing what I do to draw attention to God rather than draw attention to myself.
Yeah. You both said a couple things that resonate, which is, one, you have to be intentional with your approach to, being competitive, whether it's, a sport or a CrossFit. Well, in your life in general, you have to be able to do that. But also, I think what happens is, into this person that asked the question, is there's a couple things that you should remember when you're in competition and you get anxious and you get hyper-competitive. One, your anxiety is a normal physiological response to a high-pressure situation. It's a it's something that God created in us so that we could understand if our life was in danger, you know, or if we needed to do something beyond maybe our normal physical capacity. And so that anxiety is there for a reason. So you can harness it and you can use it as a healthy tool and not let it be consuming. You know, it's like you got to go left or you got to go right, but you got to make a decision and you can't be stuck there. And some people get in that anxious state and they just stay there. So to this person, it's okay to have a little bit of anxiety. You just can't let it be crippling. As far as your competitiveness goes, you need to understand that everybody is there for the same reason. Whether you're whatever sport you're playing or in CrossFit, they're all there to be better. And for some people, that metric of better is winning. If you win something, that's a proof that you have outperformed the person next to you. And that's okay too. But the problem with that is it can't be the only factor that you use. It can't be the only metric measurement of success. And when that becomes it, I mean, any elite competitor will tell you, and you hear this a lot in CrossFit from people who have won the CrossFit Games multiple times or ultra high competitors, they will admittedly say, listen, my life is completely self-centered and self-focused. Everything that I do from the minute I wake up to the minute I go to bed is for myself. It's for nobody else. And in fact, I surround myself with people who share that same goal for me as I do. And they're there to help me be focused on me. And it's a completely one-sided relationship. It's selfish. It's unhealthy, but I want to win. And I respect that. I can respect the honesty there. But on the flip side of that, a lot of them will say, and that's why I have to retire. That's why I can't do this forever, because I'm not meant to live this way. I'm not meant to be that way. And that's important to remember too, is when you're hyper-competitive and when you get really, really anxious, you got to remember that everybody on the field with you is feeling the same way. They all want to win too, and they're all anxious, especially at a high level. And so you have to remember that. But there's something that both you and Dan said, which was, what's your true identity? Because all that is fleeting. Someday you're not going to be able to back squat what you used to back squat. Someday you're not going to be able to play hockey. Someday you're not going to be able to, you know, run like you used to or bike like you used to. Those things are fleeting. They're going to go away. Who are you then? And if you can establish earlier on in your life that you are a child of God and that you are His, well, then that becomes your identity. And talking about all this reminded me of a Bible verse in Matthew. I think it's in Matthew 6, maybe like verse 33 and 34. It says, and I'm paraphrasing here, Dan can help me out. It says, seek first the kingdom of God. Am I correct on that? It says, seek first the kingdom of God. And then in the very next sentence, it says, and be anxious for nothing, or don't be anxious for tomorrow. Because those anxieties are already going to be there, you know? And so as we're talking, that keeps popping up in my head of like, seek first the kingdom of God. That's your ultimate purpose in life for all of us as Christians. And especially if this person is a walking with the Lord as a competitor and as a CrossFitter, like those are things that you do. They're not who you are. Your job is to seek the kingdom of God. That's your first, everything in you do, whether it's on the field or picking up that barbell, you're doing it proclaiming Christ and proclaiming that, like, hey, I'm not just some competitor. I'm a competitor saved by grace. And everything that I'm going to do for His glory. And that's my identity, because at some point during my life, I'm not going to be able to do this anymore. I won't be able to do it to the capacity that I'm doing it now. And then what? Well, if I'm looking at it from that perspective, well, I'm still who I am in His eyes. And my task here is not complete. I still have work to do. And then the second part of that is be anxious for nothing. I mean, don't be anxious for, it's like, because you've established that, don't let that be crippling. Don't let that, you know, let the Lord be your purpose. And when you let the Lord be your purpose, well, all those anxieties, all those things that you think are important, all those anxieties that you have, or the things that you put pressure on, they suddenly become, I don't want to say they become unimportant or irrelevant, but it starts to put into focus the things that are truly important. Because at some point, and I say this often, but at some point we're all going to stand before the Lord. And I think that as impressive as your life may have been, as many games as you won, or some of the things that you accomplished, he's going to be looking at your heart. He's going to be looking at, hey man, that one time during class when you were really anxious and hyper competitive and trying to beat everybody, it's like, what was going on in that class? Were you representing me? Were you still showing love to the person next to you, showing support? Congrats. It's like, those are the things that, those matters of the heart. Those are the things that really, really matter. And if you can start to place your identity in that, I feel like you don't need to lose, you're not going to lose that competitive drive. You're not going to lose that ability to completely stamp out anxiety, but it just starts to put into perspective who you are, like what your true identity is. And I think it's a lesson that everybody is constantly learning, but you know, and I struggle with it, dude. I mean, I struggle with it. I always say that I'm not competitive, but it's a lie. You know, the minute that clock goes off, it's like, I shut it down. And sometimes it's not against anybody. It's just with myself. And if I start to crumble and fall apart, I have to check myself, because things can go south really, really quickly for me mentally. If I'm like really struggling, it's like, it can ruin a day. It can ruin my night, you know, knowing that I'm physically capable of doing something, but for some reason, my body won't allow it or my brain won't allow it. And I can nitpick it apart. And I mean, Dan was talking earlier about practicing songs. Like he was like, I'm type A, dude. It's like when I play a song, it's like, it's got to be good. I need to know that I know it. And I need to, it's like, that's, I don't want to just learn it to learn it. I want to learn it and like be able to perform it and play it comfortably and really, really well. And that's the kind of pressure that I put on myself. And to the layman and on a Sunday, they're not going to know the difference.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they might still get a really great Holy Spirit filled moment out of the song that he just played. But for him, it's like those, that internal drive to just say, hey, no, this is, in order to make the experience enjoyable for me, I need to have that comfort level of knowing that I did everything that I could do to kind of learn that, that song. I mean,
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, is it kind of pours into not just competitiveness with sports, but with life. There's a lot of, whether it's internal, external. And I just wanted to quote a great preacher named Chris Swales. He mentioned something in a sermon that really stood out, and it's a profound truth that when Jesus says good and faithful servant, it's not something that's earned, it's a gift that he gives. And so we can't earn it, but he wants to give it to us because of his grace and just the fact that we are seeking to live our lives with him. And that's the most important thing, because so many people think of that as like an earning thing, and then even their spiritual life can get competitive. Like they need to be like the holiest person in the room, which when you try to be the holiest person in the room, you're not, because you're missing the point. You know, one of the things that, as we were talking, we've been talking a lot about internal pressure, but I want to take a moment to talk about external pressure. There are a lot of people that have expectations placed on them outside of themselves. So we can all think of that, I'm sure, like the external pressures that cause anxiety and fuel an unhealthy way to be competitive. If we're going off music for a hot second, I was told in college, when I first tried out for this touring worship team out of my college, the first time I tried out, they were just like, you're not good enough. You're just not. And again, it comes back into like a self-worth kind of a thing. But when I took it that you're not good enough, I had a lot of value in that. And so there was a lot of anxiety. I thought I was okay, but I didn't make it. So like, that's an external pressure. Or if this is a younger person, or even as people get older, you might have parents that put unnecessary pressure on you to perform because they feel like that's your only way to college, or that's, you know, they want to have, if they're honest with themselves, they want to also have that recognition of, hey, my kid's really good or the best. And man, that can be crippling too. And we're talking about finding our value in God. And a lot of times our parents or mentors or coaches, God has created those relationships to pour into us healthy competitiveness or healthy demonstrations of love. And the family system, really the father and the mother, are to be like reflect a God's image to them of what, that's why so many people have not, I'm not using this term lightly, but like daddy issues mm-hmm. or father issues, is because their father was not a good representation of who their heavenly father was. Mm. So just even the thought of God being their father already stirs up all sorts of negative connotations. I mean, me, just it's a hard term for me to wrap my brain around sometimes, because I didn't have that example from especially my biological dad. There were aspects that was good. There are aspects that it wasn't. And I'm just thinking about too, like so many kids of coaching in hockey or coaching in a sport or relationships that I have with now with kids in high school and specifically at Culver Academies, if y'all can look them up, but they have one of the best hockey programs in the nation. And I was fortunate enough to coach there. And all these kids had this expectation that they had to make it to the NHL. And some of them did because they were darn good. But the thing is that these were 14-year-old boys that their parents had this expectation on them that they had to make it to the most elite level. Mm-hmm. And what's not talked about behind the curtain is the amount of stress and anxiety that these kids got placed in because they felt like they needed to earn this expectation or earn the love of their parents or their coaches or their mentors. And what a difficult place that is to be. So I don't know if that's what this person that answered the question, but it's something that I want to toss out to you guys too. Like, how do we deal with that? What do we do with the external expectations and pressures when it comes to competitiveness? Because somebody might not be like, mm-hmm. I want to do it. It's more like I want to earn love or respect or recognition from those who are closest to me.
Yeah, I think to piggyback off that, I mean, that's going to come down to you can't control what other people are going to do or how they're going to react or the kind of pressure that they're going to put on you. I mean, you can ask, you can have a conversation and say, hey, listen, the pressure that you're putting on me right now is unrealistic. But a lot of people aren't aware enough to do that. And especially if this is a younger person and these are adults or so on and so forth. I mean, whatever the reason for their pressure is, whether it's self-induced or there's a bit of both, it's self-induced and external pressure. I mean, I think that the same answer still applies, is like, one, you need to figure out who you are and who you truly are, where your heart is. I think you need to answer it with what Chris said, which is figure out your why. Like, hey, why do I want to be the best? You know, what value am I going to get out of this other than the walking around saying that I'm the best, you know, or winning? Like, what is my true reasoning for wanting to do this, you know? And if it's ingrained into my DNA, if it's already written, you know, into my genome and I can't change that, well, that's fine. I need to accept that this is how I'm wired, but you still need to figure out, you know, not just how to optimize, you know, your operating system. You need to understand like why it is that you are operating that way in the first place. And then what happens when you don't operate that way? What are you going to do? Because ultimately at some point, there's going to come a time in your life where no matter how hard you tried, no matter how hard you trained, and no matter how many people put external pressure on you and told you that you had to, you know, perform a certain way so that you could get, you know, into a school or make a team or whatever, it doesn't matter. At some point, there's going to be failure there. And then what? Yep. How do you deal? I think that when the chips are down, dude, I think that's when, you know, every elite competitor will tell you the same story. They're going to be like, my defining moments aren't the wins, because I woke up the next morning after the win and I just felt the same like you. You yep. never satiated ever. They were like, all my defining moments were in my failures.
I mean, there is an aspect of that makes you a better competitor, but just in case this is kind of the direction you were thinking when you asked this question, it is my view that you cannot be an elite athlete and be anxious during your competition or whatever it may be. That's prior to the military, I did yoga. And I'm not like saying that people should do yoga, but those techniques that I learned, controlling my breathing and stuff like that, when I went into combat, were a huge thing. Being anxious is not an option. As soon as you're anxious, you know, you're making mistakes. And people would tell me, you know, that when I was getting shot at, it was almost creepy how relaxed I was. I was almost more relaxed during that time than I was when things were quiet. You know, I had taught myself how to relax in stressful situations. And, you know, and I continued to use those techniques, you know, afterwards being an elite athlete. And I think there's an importance there. It's just from the competitive standpoint, it's okay to have that anxiety before you do whatever you do in a healthy way. But as you're competing, you can't compete at your highest level if you have any of that anxiety during the competition. And I think once you're kind of wound up and, you know, you performed, whether you did well or not, it's very difficult to wind down after that competition. That was especially the case for me, like coming back from combat, going from like a high level of adrenaline and then coming back to a relaxed situation is a very difficult transition. And I think in competition, it's a much smaller, you know, it's a much smaller effect, but you do kind of go from that. You know, your adrenaline is hyped up, you're trying to do well, and it's really hard to come down after that. So I think prior to competition, you have to find that the ability to relax, and also after the competition. And that's a time period that is probably, you know, the person that asked the question kind of mentioned that it's affecting the people that they love around them. And I think that's crucial. You know, you can't let these things affect your relationships. And if you're not able to kind of, you know, deal with that aspect of it, then you have to address, is this worth ruining my relationships with the people I love? And if you're not able to compete and maintain those good relationships, I mean, you really have to assess, like, you know, what your priorities are as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think we've gone pretty deep, but a good homework assignment for all of us to do is watch Inside Out 2.
Yeah.
Have you all seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah.
So my kids to see it.
I think this it speaks perfectly to this, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you get introduced, if y'all haven't seen it, then this is an introduction. If you have seen it, then just walk down memory lane with me. But Riley is introduced. She hits puberty and she gets introduced to a whole new set of emotions, including, what was it? It's anxiety. It's boredom, like bashful, like that mm-hmm. kind of a thing, like shy or whatever. And then there's envy. And to me, like, some of those actually aren't really emotions, but bear with me. We're gonna partner with Disney on this one. But in the story, she's invited to play at this hockey camp because she's really good. Of course, it's hockey because hockey is awesome. So she gets invited to this hockey camp, and she gets introduced to these new emotions. And one of them is anxiety. And so anxiety kind of kicks out like joy, anger, sadness, disgust, and fear. So kind of kicks out those emotions and just overtakes every aspect of what she's doing. And so she's really driven. She gets up early to play hockey on top of playing hockey all day because she needs to impress the coach. And at the with this whole entire thing, at the center of Riley is this view of self. Is this self-worth, the self-value? And so she goes from, before she's introduced to these new emotions, she just has a central belief that she's a good person, which we'll say, okay, she, let's just say she had a good self-worth. Like she had a good parameter of her worth as a human being. And she wanted to be kind. And so that's where she found her self-worth. Well, when anxiety gets there, she shoots that out the window and starts building this new view of self. And by the end of it, the view came, the central belief was, I'm not good enough. And so as Riley's living into this during this hockey camp and being riddled with anxiety, she then breaks away from her two best friends earlier in childhood. And then even those people that she's trying to be friends with, she starts being complete jerks to them as well. And it gets to the point where Riley finally is tossed into the penalty box because she does something that she didn't even intend to happen, which was seriously injure one of her closest friends. And so she enters into this penalty box and she has a major anxiety attack. And in order to calm her down, anxiety like spun her emotions outside of control. And so at this, what gets her to calm down is all of her emotions just embrace her around how she viewed herself. And then she goes back out on the ice as soon as she calms down, and she goes and she has a clarity of mind. She is enjoying what she's doing again. She realizes why she's there is not to make the hockey team, or that's not the only reason, but it's because she thoroughly enjoys going out, competing, and having fun and enjoying that. And I know it's kind of like it's a gear towards a kid's movie, but I think it has a lot of good things in it. And I think that it's alluding to both what we just all that we've been talking about today. It's a good case study to look at is when we know where our value is and we are followers of Jesus and we know that our value isn't just in the image that we place on ourselves, because oftentimes that can be easily distorted and lead to pride, but it's the value that God says that we are as children, that we're worth dying for. That's where our value is in. And so when we go to competition, I mean, every single time, like I need to go to the bathroom before we do a workout, mm-hmm. just because I start getting, or before a run, if I know it's going to be a hard run, I got to clear myself out. Like there are plenty of athletes that are like that because, you know, you get the butterflies in your stomach, you start to tense up a little bit. And then when it actually starts, like Chris said, it's almost like you might have a little bit of that, but you can breathe. And you can just accept, you know what, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it to the best of my abilities and celebrate that, because my value and worth is not just in how I perform. It's what I do during the performance. It's who I am. You know, I'm rejoicing in that and loving that I have this opportunity to be able to do this thing. And so when you're riddled with anxiety, and all of us have probably been in there for different, you know, we get anxiety from external pressures or internal pressures with performing. We often might not do a movement right, or we hurt ourselves, or we hurt somebody else. But when we actually have a healthy view of ourselves and other people and being in that, we actually can find enjoyment and compete even at a higher level.
Mm-hmm. I mean, where's where training and preparation comes in too. It's like, it's not just the physical, it's not just training and practice and all that isn't just the act of the physical performance. You're training mentally as well. You're putting yourself in those situations in a controlled and practiced environment so that you can learn to control those emotions. Kind of like what Chris was saying, like when he was in the middle of a firefight, he was calm. I mean, that comes from the training of the mind. And so the more you can do that, the more focused you're going to be, and those anxiety, you can quell those anxieties down. But something I was thinking about because you were talking about Inside Out too, and like all those emotions and just thinking about kids at that age. And I think in our line of work, all three of us in CrossFit and in ministry and whatever youth group and right, we get to see a lot of kids and a lot of people put a lot of added pressure on themselves. And so I was just kind of thinking about, you know, you were asking us like, what do you do about external pressure? Dan, you kind of asked us that question. And I think that this is some homework for some parents too. If you're a parent or if you're a leader or somebody who other people look up to, whether it be your kids or a team that you coach or anything like that, I think that there's something important that you need to do is you need to make sure that you're letting those people know, and your kids, if you're a parent, that your child's worth isn't based on things like their performance or whether or not they won the game or how their grades are for that matter. And I think that that's important because I think that even well-intentioned parents who just want the best for their kids tend to place not only their identity as a parent, because it really becomes about who you are as a parent. If your kid does good, well, that means you're a good parent. And you're going to place this external pressure on your kids. Something that my wife does that I want to call her out for and commend her for is every night, and it actually something that kind of almost irritates me sometimes because I'm trying to unwind in our room, but I've really grown to appreciate it, is the kids come and they pile in our bed, like right before bed. And she does this thing called appreciations where she has everybody just go around and they just say everything that they appreciate about somebody in the family. And we usually start with Tilly and then we just work our way up until it ends with me. And you just say something that you appreciate, what they did that day or how they've been. And it used to irritate me because it was like every single night. And sometimes the kids would just say the same things over and over again. But what I quickly realized what she was doing is she was teaching them that sometimes who you think you are and how other people view you can be two different things. And then also you're placing value on somebody else that maybe they haven't recognized yet. And what that does is that allows somebody to be able to look at themselves from a little bit more of a less of a subjective standpoint and more of like, hey, this person really recognized these qualities in me. And that's really where some of my value and worth comes from, because I could have had a really bad day, or I could have made some choices that day that internally I don't feel like made me a good person or a performer, or I failed. And so what it does is it just kind of adds this value to who you are, and it shows the kids and it shows my wife and I, because we do it with each other, that there are so many other qualities besides the qualities that you think define you. And I think that that's really, really important. I think as parents, we need to be able to do that. It's like, I try to remember that because I see a lot of parents, it's like they're obsessed with like, they don't want their kids doing this. They don't want their kids doing that. They have to get their homework done. And all these things are important. I'm not belittling any of that stuff. But I think one thing that like my wife and I have come to an agreement on is that, hey, listen, if anything, we're going to teach our kids to love the Lord with all their heart. That is who they are. That's their identity. We want to talk about it openly, talk about it freely, and then make sure that they understand that that's where their value is. That if they don't do anything right that entire day, you know, if they fail at everything, that the most important thing is that they understand that the Lord loves them, and that if they have asked him into their lives and they are forgiven and saved by grace, that if they were to never do anything else for the rest of their lives, that's really the only thing truly, I mean, truly why we were put on this earth was for that purpose. And so to any parents out there who are maybe putting some unneeded pressure on your kids, take a step back for a minute and say, hey, what am I really teaching my kid here? It's okay to tell them that they got to do well in school. They got to study. Those things are all important. You know, if you want to be a happy, healthy human being, those things are important. You need to have some discipline. But I think a lot of times parents are neglecting that one aspect of raising their kids and really just helping them understand that, hey, if anything, I want to make sure that you have an identity, and not just an identity in your sport or what college you're going to go to, because we see that a lot. See a lot of parents, and it's like, parents wrap their identity in their kids. So now all the parents, it's like these parents have lost their identity, and their identity is their kids, and they're obsessed with their kids' sports and getting their kids to every single freaking game that they can. It's like, dude, it's like now we've got a kid who doesn't know who they are and a parent who's completely lost who they are. And it's like, take a step back and remember, like, why were we put here? What does my relationship look like with the Lord right now? And is that affecting my relationship with everybody else? You know, and I think a lot of parents fail at that daily. We fail at that, you know? So I wanted to add that in there.
Let me find it here. I don't think we could get through this podcast without this verse. Let me find it. I wrote it down. My memory isn't as good as theirs. So it's Matthew 16:26. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? And I think that's a perfect example of what we're trying to talk about here. You know, kind of all this other stuff that we've mentioned is important, you know, alleviating the anxiety and stuff like that. But like when it comes down to it, someone once told me that when you're on your deathbed, you know, you're not looking back and, you know, regretting the things that, you know, you didn't earn, you know, the games that you haven't won, the money that you didn't earn. The things you regret the most are, you know, the mistakes that you've made in relationships and not making amends with the people you love, maybe not connecting with the Lord. I think that's the biggest thing, is when people are on their deathbed, they really think about their relationship with God. And there's, you know, plenty of reasons for that. But like when it really comes down to it, I mean, what has your relationship with God been? And what has the relationship with the people you love been? You know, I know we had a whole episode on love, but you know, that's truly the most important thing is love. I mean, Jesus broke down the commandments to two things: to love God and to love people. And I think if we focus more time on those things, our lives completely change in so many ways.
Yeah, and I think that for whoever wrote this question, if you have follow-up questions for us, I think that would be good, because we didn't even dive into, like, how are we able to, Chris did a little bit of how he was able to train his mind to deal with anxiety, or to quiet out those expectations of others or the internal expectations that we place on ourselves. If that would be helpful to you, like addressing the anxiety a little bit more, because you're not the only person. It's not like there's so many people wrestle with anxiety. It's crazy. And it's not just people who are dealing in competition within a sport or within CrossFit. So if you have any follow-up questions for us, please send it our way. And then we can dive into that a little bit more for the next time, because I feel like that's a whole nother thing. One of the worst things that we could do is just be like, you know what? Just don't be anxious.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, thank you. Inside Out too, Joy was like, I'll just tell anxiety not to worry so much. And anxiety will be like, oh, I never thought of that, Joy. You know, so if you have any follow-up questions for that, we want to be sensitive to it. And so just go ahead and send it our way. And hopefully this was helpful to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good place to end it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe at some point we could jump into some best practices of like, hey, here's some things that you can start to implement on a regular basis that'll maybe help get you to where you need to be. But I think to say what Dan was saying was like, you don't need to shy away from your emotions. Like, it's okay to be anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, And guess what? Like before this podcast was on, we were all downstairs talking about being anxious and being having some depression issues and dealing with the stressors of life, and how even rock solid men of faith who walk with the Lord daily and do devotionals and stand up in front of people and preach and all that. It's like, even we have days and moments where we're just anxious for literally nothing, for no reason at all, or we're really struggling mentally and it's hard to dig yourself out of that hole. And that's okay, man. Everyone's there. I think the biggest thing that this person can recognize is that you're not alone. Mm-hmm. You're not alone. Doesn't matter if you're on a field, in your CrossFit gym, or just at home, stressing out and anxious or hyper-competitive and worrying about whether you're going to perform well. It's like there is almost everybody else is probably in that same place as you are, or at least has been at some point. And that's okay. It's all right to be there.
And so, I think just kind of what you brought up earlier before this, everybody is more anxious now than I've seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in a lot of ways, things have been worse, but, you know, even the small things are getting to people now.
Yeah.
And now more than ever, we need the community and we need the support from one another. So I think one of the big things that I want to wrap this up with is, you know, the three of us are here for whoever's out there listening. And if you just need to talk things out or whatever is causing you anxiety, you know, there are people that love you.
Yeah. People at this church.
Yep.
People at this church, and not even just Dan and Chris and Mary or me. I think there's a lot of people. Dan and Mary have fostered a community here of people who are very empathetic, but also just easy to talk to. And that's a cultural thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to foster that community. So I think that's a good point. And then also just for people out there, like, hey, listen, the world's just going to get crazier and crazier and crazier. People are going to get more anxious. They're going to get more competitive with certain things. They're going to want to be right about things. It's just, this is the landscape we live in, but our identity is in the Lord. As Christians and believers, that's who we are. Yeah. Every single day. That's, remember that. In every situation, you're a child of God first and foremost before anything. Mm-hmm. And you have to hold on to that. And sometimes you're dangling by a thread, but you know, you need to remember that, you know. And I think we try to do that on a daily basis, at least, you know, at some point during our day. I'm just like, hey, I'm saved. And I know that regardless of how I'm feeling right now, the Lord is working, and he's, like we always say, he's sovereign. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So
cool.
All right. I guess let's wrap this up. And as always, you know, I want each and every person out there to realize we love you guys, and you are loved just the way you are. The good stuff, the bad stuff, and we accept you for who you are. And if you guys need anything, don't hesitate to email us or contact us in any way that you know how. So I hope you guys have a good week, and we'll see you again next week.
Yeah. Take care, y'all.
Peace.